Hello, hello. Welcome to Sight Unseen. My name is Tani Katunjian, and I'm your host. Sight Unseen is a half-hour weekly program presenting candid conversations with the artists of our time. This week, an interview with director Lynn Shelton, speaking about her film, Hump Day, which is hitting theaters in the U.S. this week. But before getting to Hump Day, a few things I've had on my mind. First, thank you to all the listeners who tuned in for the interviews with curator Corey Keller about Robert Frank's The Americans. There's been a huge response to the show, and just this week I went to see the latest photo exhibition at the SF MoMA, a retrospective of another legend, Richard Avedon. A very touching story I heard at that exhibition about Avedon. He had a strained relationship with his father, and to get closer to him, he took photographs of him until his death. As he was dying, Richard wrote him a letter and placed it in his shirt pocket, telling him that he always wanted to be close with him, and that photography was the way to do that. Well, today we're speaking with director Lynn Shelton about another sort of intimacy, that between two male friends. Lynn lives in Seattle, and there's an amateur pornographic film festival that happens there every year. Once, a close friend of hers was visiting. He was a straight male, is a straight male, and expressed his shock at his attraction to a gay pornographic film. This got Lynn thinking about how men are so often uncomfortable with intimacy, particularly with other men, so she wanted to explore this issue further in a fiction film. The result is Hump Day, a film about two heterosexual close male friends who set out to make a pornographic film in which they make love. Ben is married, has a job, a house, and is getting ready to have a child. His close friend Andrew fancies himself a bohemian traveling the world with no visible ties. One day, Andrew shows up on Ben's doorstep. They get drunk one night and on that night decide to make a pornographic film together. When they're sober, Ben doesn't want to back down out of fear that he may seem square, and Andrew doesn't want to back down because he wants to complete what he started. And while the film may seem like it's about pornography and homosexuality, or at least our discomfort around it, it really looks at intimacy, identity, male friendship, love, and being true to yourself. I spoke with Lynn Shelton when she was in San Francisco. Here, Lynn reflects on what she observed when her friend was visiting and reacting to the pornographic film he saw. Stay tuned.
That whole experience got me thinking about the relationship between straight men and gayness, you know, not gay porn, gay sex, but just gayness, and how there really is this, you know, residual tension that exists, that doesn't exist between other people surrounding their sexual identities. You know, it doesn't exist between gay men and straightness, or straight women and gayness, or anything. Just for straight guys, you know, and any kind of indication that they might secretly have some kind of homosexual tendency, you know, that they might secretly be gay in some way, freaks them out, you know. Not all of them, but there is definitely this tension there. So it immediately adds a poignancy and an awkwardness to, for instance, the relationships that they might have with other straight guys, if there's a passionate platonic, you know, love, which I have witnessed in my life over the years, that straight guys can really fall for each other in a very passionate, almost romantic way, but it's not, and, you know, it is platonic. What does that mean, you know? And when they express themselves, that emotion for each other, it's really, let's say they do it, you know, they're able to say, I love you. That they immediately have to kind of, there's got to be a membrane there, a safety net. And so I've always been fascinated by the intricacies and nuances of human interaction, or the attempt to interact with other human beings. And these particular set of individuals, there's so much poignancy there in their desire to connect and inability to just easily do so.
It's interesting. I mean, I did think about the gay factor, so to speak, or the issue of sexuality and sexual identity. That's definitely something I thought about. But, I mean, obviously, and that's definitely what's mentioned in almost all the reviews, mm-hmm. is this issue around the fears and the discomforts around seeming gay, being attracted to men, stepping over boundaries that you generally don't. But really for me, what was more poignant or potent was just this sense of competition and one-upmanship, and that sense, especially for Ben, to feel like he's not tied into this life of his that mm-hmm. he's so scared of being tied into. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that, really, about that sense of, you know, just to lay it out, Ben is one of the main characters who is married and about to have a child, hopefully, is trying at least, and has a regular job. And he's really scared, actually, by being like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to backtrack a little bit, what you said is that the film is about that the sort of sexual politics and the that whole male sexuality and that gets brought up a lot. And I agree with you. I really feel like it's, in a way, it's a MacGuffin. You know, the concept, the sort of high concept, seems like it's going to be all about that. And then it actually ends up being about a lot of other things, sort of just a sexy hook to get them into the theater. But really, it's about all these other things. Yeah. At the very least, a conduit. You know, it definitely does touch on that stuff. But I do feel like it's really much more about male friendship, about marital relationships, and about that sort of complicated relationship we have with that sense of self, right? So the way that our sense of self shifts in relationship to other people in different contexts, you know, you see this guy who is really a different person with his wife than he is with his friend, you know, and you really see that person he becomes with his friend or even a slightly different shade of it when he's at this party and he can be, you know, yet just a completely different person. And there's a conversation he has with his wife where he's telling her that she can come to this party, but he's really dissuading her from coming and knows that if he plays it right that she won't come. And I don't even know if he's consciously doing it. I think he really is a well-meaning guy. And he's constantly rationalizing, you know. And even if he knows that he's dissuading her from coming, he might be thinking that I'm protecting her, you know, because she would feel awkward here and she wouldn't have a good time. But really, he doesn't want her there because he wants to explore this other self that he doesn't think he can be.
And he's scared that there's something kind of wrong with that other self. It's almost like he doesn't want to show her that. Like he's mm-hmm. it takes a risk to show her that. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. I love that it's about all these things. Because I was sat in the theater. I read the Guardian review and I thought, okay, well, I don't know much about this movie. The gay porn thing, we'll see what, you know, how that manifests. But then all these other issues came up and I thought, fantastic. Yeah, so that particularly, you know, she seems to be all conservative to him, but she's not at all.
Yeah, right. And that's really fascinating to me, too, of these two people who are it's a good marriage, which was really important for me. So it's not a marriage in which these two people are basically disaffected from each other, you know, or they're having trouble or they're sort of cut off or cold. I mean, in the very first scene, I try to really establish that these are two people who can laugh together, that they have a great sense of humor, they can talk things out, and they have a deep affection for each other, even if they're not having sex at every opportunity, you know, because they've been together a while and they have these real lives, they obviously have this deep connection to each other. And yet, even so, it's not this sort of cardboard cutout marriage where, oh yeah, everything is perfect and hunky-dory and they're perfectly happy and they feed every aspect of each other's lives. There are things that they keep secret from each other, whether it's out of fear or out of just a desire to hold something that doesn't belong to this other person, you know. And it's a complicated thing to have a deep intimacy with another human being mm-hmm. and to not sort of sacrifice your sense of self, you know. The idea of long-term relationships and the level of differentiation you can have from the other person is something that's continually, you know, fascinating to me and interesting to me. And so there's two different intimacies that we're looking at here because, you know, I think the reason the whole story takes place in the first place is Andrew's character, the adventuring, you know, roaming artist guy, shows up on the doorstep of his domesticated buddy, and there's a reason that he shows up out of the blue for the first time in years, and it's that he's, I think, you know, been really feeling his solitude. He's based his entire life on this vision of himself as being totally free and able to do whatever he wants to do and call himself whatever he wants to call himself, whether it's an artist or whatever, and go wherever he wants to go, in sacrifice to, you know, he hasn't been able to have an intimate, deep-seated relationship with anybody. And I think he's really feeling that. He's suddenly feeling lonely and needs connection. And he looks back over his life and he sees, you know, maybe the one person in his life who he ever had that with, and it was Ben. And so he's looking for that again. There's intimacy there too. He's trying to recapture an intimacy. So it's a very different kind, obviously, than the relationship between Ben and Anna. But difficulty of connecting to another human being in a really deep way is something that I find endlessly fascinating.
I do too. And I find it endlessly fascinating, the notion of long-term relationships and what happens and who we are in those relationships and what we let out and what we don't, and the safety of that. And I also find fascinating the notion of what we project onto others. You know, so Ben projects onto Andrew, you know, he's this free spirit and has had this extraordinary life, and Ben's just conservative and, you know, he's not boring, but he sees himself, you know, he's scared of being that way.
Right.
We always think the other side is greener, and it's not necessarily. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to just talk a little more about the relationship between Ben and Anna and what comes up in honesty. You know, what is honesty here? Honesty with yourself, mm-hmm. honesty with your partner, and mm-hmm. just explore that a bit. I know it's a vague question, but when I bring that up, what comes to mind?
Well, I mean, the first thing that came up for me was just this way that this pattern, this behavior pattern that you recognize, I start to recognize when I see that the few scenes that you see between Ben and Anna, in which Ben always seems to be rationalizing to her. You know, there's always this sort of automatic rationalization that's going on. And I don't know, it's just one kind of symptom or one like behavior pattern that I think can come up in a long-term relationship. A friend of mine, Sherman Alexie, wrote in one of his stories that marriage is hard labor. It's really hard labor. And every day you have to make the choice to be in it. You know, a conscious choice. And even with that conscious choice, and even with that, you know, a sort of awareness of that it's work, it doesn't mean that we're always, you know, we're always doing what we should be doing in the relationship, or that we're always doing it the best way, you know. I think there's sort of a constant bit of fumbling. We think we know somebody and we don't. We don't know all of them, even if we're married to them, you know, and that endless sense of mystery and depth and, you know, and those sort of inner selves and other sides to us, I think are what make us, you know, kind of interesting and continually, you know, interesting. And I don't have an answer. It's not like I'm trying to make some sort of statement, you know, about how, oh, you know, marriage can never work because of this, or, you know, whatever. We're all, you know, I was grateful for the opportunity to kind of explore that terrain, you know, and just kind of show the complications of every human, you know, intimacy, and also every, you know, every human sort of intimate relationship, and also just the human, the self.
Well, what I think what's beautiful about it is that it does work. You know, marriage, I mean, marriage isn't perfect. Nothing is perfect. Relationships, friendships, everything, you know, our work, everything. And even if we absolutely love it, even if we found our soulmate, yeah. even if we have best friends, even if our family's amazing, mm-hmm. it's still not perfect and it's messy. And that's life. That's why it resonates. You know, that's why the film, I think, really works mm-hmm. for so many people. You know, it's true that a lot of the reviewers talk about the porn aspect of it or the gayness aspect of it, which, of course, is intriguing and engaging. But I mm-hmm. think that's not the thing that hooks them in. I think mm-hmm. even if they may not acknowledge it, it's like, oh, yeah, I feel that. I understand that. And that's beautiful when a film can do that. It's interesting that when you want to break a boundary, sex always is the thing that sort of does it. You know, it's like I wondered if maybe they had, you know, decided to argue about climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, mm-hmm. would it have as much of an effect? I mean, did you think of them having another kind of a competition? And that's one question. The other one is, if this were about women, mm-hmm. would it also be about them making a porn mm-hmm. together?
Yeah, number one, no. I don't think there would be a movie there if they were. There would be no. I mean, it's like he brings it up at the end. You know, he's like, "Well, this could have been anything." You know, we just threw this gauntlet down for each other, but that's not true, really, you know, which they also sort of get to eventually. But then the question about women is really an interesting one. I've had this actually has happened a couple of different times where I've had a conversation with somebody who saw the film with so they're in a relationship, right? And they see it with another couple that are friends, and then the four of them are all talking. So it's two guys and two girls, and the two guys invariably at some, you know, like, can you imagine if we, you know, got ourselves into that? And then they ask the women, the two friends, you know, what about you guys? And the women are like, well, we would have just done it. And it wouldn't have been a struggle, you know, because these guys, it's just such a struggle for them, right? So there's that. But in the first, but they never would have gotten themselves into that in the first place, that because there wouldn't have been, or the motivations would have been completely different. I'm not saying that women aren't competitive. There's lots of competition in relationships, but in female relationships. But I'm just saying that it's a different tone. It has a whole different focus, I think, generally. You know, there's not that same testosterone-soaked one-upmanship thing. It's just a different vibe, you know. I don't think there would have, I just don't think, I, you know, it would have been a totally different film, let's just put it that way, with women, I think.
So, like I pointed out, you are married and you're a woman and you do live in Seattle and you're in the film. And I'm just curious, how did it affect how you view your own sexuality, mm-hmm. your own married life, and the life that you've chosen for yourself? How did it affect you?
I mean, I feel like I'm a combination of Ben and Andrew, you know, in terms of the life of the artist, the life of a married person with a family. You know, I have a 10-year-old kid. And I've been in my marriage, I think we're coming up on 16 years married, and then we were living together 4 years before that. So yeah, 20 years together. Oh my God, I'm old. And that is a long time to be with somebody, and it's a very good marriage. I mean, I have to say, I'm eternally grateful on a daily basis for my husband and my son too, for really being just incredibly supportive and letting me do what I love to do, because it takes a lot of patience and a lot of hard work on their parts. But I can do it. I have found a way to do both, you know, to have the life of the artist and to have, it's a constant, again, it's that hard labor, you know, that Sherman talked about. It's constantly working to make that balance, you know, to make it work. And the first feature film I made was really hard on my family. I feel like I took a vacation in a way from my family, because I didn't know, it was the first time I'd ever worked that hard, and it was like film school. I'd never been on a set before, and the whole thing was just overwhelming. And I was sort of like, you know, I woke up one day and realized, oh, hi, you guys, you know, hi, I haven't seen you in a while, you know, and so ever since then, I've worked really hard to find a way to balance the two. And it seemed at first like it might be impossible. And then I realized, no, it is possible. It's just a constant conscientiousness. And in terms of my sexual identity, I'm a monogamous straight woman, but the boundaries of that identity are a lot more fluid in terms of, you know, I could see in my past, in my 20s, how I could have fallen in love with a woman, and I could have been with, you know, for me, it doesn't, I'm basically straight, but I'm definitely, you know, not all straight, not like these guys, you know, and the boundaries, the fluidity and rigidity of sexual, different people for their sexual, the boundaries of different people's sexual identity has always been kind of a background interest of me as well. And the reason I had this couple, the women in this somebody described them as pansexual, I love that, couple, is I wanted to show that for some people it really isn't a big deal to experiment, to really experiment and to really just be fluid with those boundaries. And it's just not. And for other people, it's really different. It's a struggle. It's a totally different ball game, you know. So I thought that was important to have that as a sort of a contrast in there. And it was a good time for me. It was really fun to get to explore that, you know, a little bit as Monica, just to be Monica for a few days. It was really fun. I'll admit it. Yeah, it was a great time.
Lynn Shelton speaking about her film Hump Day. To learn more about the film, please visit humpdayfilm.com. As for music, we're listening to There Is No Greater Love, somewhat fitting for the end of the show, by Sonny Rollins. And following that will be a song by, yes, you guessed it, MJ, Michael Jackson, singing I Can't Help It. and I just couldn't help playing a song by him. My name is Tani Katenjian. This is Sight Unseen, a half-hour weekly program featuring candid conversations with the artists of our time. You're listening to Resonance, 104.4 FM, the UK's first radio art station.
surprise. I can't help but see you running often through my mind, helpless like a baby. Since you're
pam 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 pam